Hi, friends. Welcome to The Butter Dish. Before we dive into today's episode, just wanted to thank you and take a moment for being here with us at The Butter Dish. Heidi and I kind of can't believe that we've got a podcast, but whether it's episode one you're joining us for or 31, we are incredibly grateful for your open-mindedness, your patience with us, as well as your willingness to evolve and change the way that you think or consider the way that you think. So without further ado, we want to introduce you to episode 31 with our friend Amber Brazicki of Biceps After Babies, where we talk all about quitting. Enjoy the episode.
What's up, guys? It's Natalie Dulaney
and Heidi Ballard,
and we are recording a podcast for you all about cutting calories. I'm hungry already.
Oh my gosh.
All right. So you're not a stranger to cutting calories, but do you know exactly what it means to do so? Like what literally happens physically in your body? We're going to go over what calorie deficits really are, and then we'll dive into some questions you asked in December.
Whatever.
But we kept them. Still applicable. Still current.
Absolutely. Always. For some of you guys, they're eternal questions.
All right, Heidi, take it away.
Okay. Losing weight is perceived as a threat by your body. It doesn't like being in a deficit.
What? People love being in a deficit, though.
So I know. Some people turn it into a lifestyle. It can reduce your BMR, which is how many calories you burn just existing. It slows down your NEAT, non-exercise adaptive thermogenesis, which is your non-exercise activity, reduces your energy in workouts. Your cravings increase. Yes, it's not even that you have a lack of willpower. It's that your body is telling you we need energy.
So believe it or not, the human body didn't actually evolve to look jacked. It evolved to survive.
What?
I know. People are like, I'm supposed to be super, super gunsy.
Yeah. Weren't cavemen super shredded?
Oh. So actually it evolved to survive. So when fat mass is under threat, it signals hard times from an evolutionary standpoint, and it doesn't really care about vanity pounds.
Mm-hmm. So when you are in a deficit, your body has a massive incentive to shed your lean muscle because your muscle burns more calories at rest. So it's more efficient for your body to get rid of muscle than it is to get rid of body fat. It also has no incentive to use calories to build it, right? Because you're the threat.
Muscle is metabolically expensive. That's so right. It's like when you're trying to cut down on your budget, you're definitely not going to be getting guac at Chipotle.
Oh, exactly.
Especially these days.
Oh my gosh. Your gains are guacamole.
Your gains. I hope you guys are laughing. We definitely think we're super funny. So hate to say it, but being in a deficit is controlled starving. Let's let that sit a little bit.
Yeah.
Your body does have to adapt or it would die.
Yep. So for men, this can look like testosterone dropping. For women, this can mean losing your period or possibly even damaging your reproductive system. Energy and libido crash, thyroid function downregulates, and your metabolic rate lowers, meaning your total daily energy expenditure, aka calories burned in a day, goes down. This is why everybody plateaus sooner or later.
Because it's a mechanism to keep you from dying.
Exactly. Yay, yeah, I know. Seriously. Great for surviving, terrible for fat loss.
So the faster you lose in a larger deficit, the more increased loss of like lean tissue, like muscle. So even if you are keeping your protein high, there is still a possibility you could lose some muscle mass. And then the longer you're in a deficit, the worse it works. Nobody gets better at being in a deficit the longer they are. And the more negative adaptations we do accumulate.
So your body is actually, the longer you're in a deficit, your body is actually priming to gain body fat, also known as adipose tissue, as quickly and as efficiently as possible, as soon as more calories are available. It's like you're giving yourself a pay cut and then going on a spending spree, which is why 1/3 to 2/3 of the people gain back more body fat than they lost in the process of going through a deficit.
So if you are somebody who's ever been in a calorie deficit, you're probably really familiar with what's happening. It's like, why do I lose it and then I gain more back? Mm-hmm. Why have I lost it and it's hard for me to like maintain and keep off? All these reasons are your body's defense system working to preserve yourself.
Absolutely. So, and there's also a mental component too. Like when you're in a calorie deficit for a long time, you build up a lot of deprivation in your mind. So when you decide, when your cut ends or you plateau and you decide, well, I'm going back to all of the foods that I've been missing, which are typically really calorie dense foods. So again, on a diminished metabolism, you're really ramping up your calorie intake. And when the calories exceed the calorie burn, that's when you gain body fat.
So now that we've established the science of it all, let's dive into like all about cutting.
I know, seriously.
Everyone's like, I feel super discouraged right now. So we've got about 20 questions about cutting. So we're just going to dive right into them. We try to like organize them in the most, you know, methodical way possible, but you know us.
It's always going to be a little random.
Right. All right. So number one, let's start with time to start one. When is time to start one? So this is obviously going to be a big old, it depends. Because arguably, especially after you heard what we just talked about, there really isn't a great time to start one, is in the sense of like, your body doesn't ever want to be in a deficit. So it's kind of like, when should I get a pay cut? Most people are going to be like, well,
is there ever a good time?
Right. So this is really going to come down to a couple different things. Are you ready? Like, are you adding this on to like a really stressful lifestyle? You know, Heidi likes to say, this is not an add-on. Cutting is not an add-on. We don't have like a full plate. And then we're like, hey, by the way, let's throw a deficit on top of it. When, and our recommendation is when you have the most time in like a nice big window where you have the least amount of obligations and the most time to learn. And what that means is that we're not tacking it on to anything. Like Heidi right now is in like a remodel with no kitchen. It's not a great time to start one.
Which I mean, this, for some of you, this may sound obvious, but for others of you, this is something you're going to really want to pay attention to, because when we are stressed, we typically go back to our most practiced patterns, which for a lot of us as women, that means obsessing about your body or wanting to cut calories or lose fat to feel like you have control over something, or you're making progress when everything else seems like it's kind of falling apart. So to Nat's point, is this something that we're planning, preparing, setting ourselves up for success for, where there's not a lot of travel. There's not a lot of family holidays, family obligations, things that can make sticking to a calorie deficit even more challenging. Or is this a, like, you saw a bad picture of yourself, somebody made a comment, you tried to put on a pair of jeans that don't fit well, and now we're having an emotional reaction to some trigger like that. And it's like a desperate, we've got to lose weight. We can't feel good until we do.
And I'm not safe in this current body.
Exactly.
Generally not a good time to start with.
Right.
So what kind of looks, air quote, ideal? When's a good time? So we like to recommend that you look at your calendar and see when you have a large block. And we're talking a couple months. We're not talking like, I have 2 weeks. This will be my next 2 weeks are really clear.
I'm going on vacation in 2 weeks.
Yeah. We're talking like 4, 8, 12 weeks. I mean, obviously in reality, you're going to have some kind of life, but we're not talking about like every weekend you're like, you know, having a birthday party, you know, going on vacation, you know, like 5 deadlines due for work. No kitchen,
seriously,
all sorts of things. So that, and then also having a little bit of planning ahead of time, kind of like what Heidi was talking about. Like, are you in a place, in a position that you can be supportive of yourself as before you start this? Can you do a little bit of meal prep? Can you have a fridge that's fully stocked? Do you have, you know, windows where you can like get good, really good sleep? Like, we're not like, you know, about to start like, you know, 3 72s of like over, you know, overnights and things like that. Like, obviously life is going to happen no matter what, but you really want to do yourself a favor and be supportive ahead of time by giving yourself a really realistic window. And if you're honest with yourself, you'll know if it's really realistic or not. All right. Number two.
How long is the perfect cut time frame, Nat?
Well, you know that we hate the word perfect because that's not real. So how long is the perfect cut time frame, Heidi?
We may just title this episode, It Depends.
Yeah,
exactly. like you were saying, I mean, you definitely want to make, you want a length of time where you can actually make some discernible progress. So in my mind, that's got to be at least 6 to 8 weeks.
Agreed.
But depending on what your weight loss goal is, it may be periods that a longer dieting phase broken up into smaller sections, which we'll be talking about as we proceed.
Right. Which goes right into the next question, which is the ideal length. So that's the tricky thing too. It's like ideal length is always going to be an it depends thing. It's like a lot of it comes down to adherence, consistency, and also like what your goals are and the purpose of you're doing it. If you're doing it just because you hate yourself, well, that's going to be a fluctuating determiner versus like I have like a 10 pound goal. Now, you know, and we really talk about goal weights as being really kind of pointless just because they're all based on some kind of like
emotional story
or preconceived notion or something like that. But as far as an ideal length goes, you have to give yourself enough time to actually see some results or get in and get out.
Yeah.
So it's going to depend on the person. It's kind of like saying, like, I'm saving for a trip. Well, how long should I save money for? Well, it depends.
Oh, yeah, that's a great way of looking at it, because, again, in a calorie deficit, every day you're accumulating calories towards fat loss. So it, yes, it is an apt analogy.
Yeah. So it's like, are you going, you know, just down the way to San Diego for a night? Mm. That's going to cost a lot different than Heidi Paris. And I wanting to go to Paris.
Yeah.
So the ideal length of how long to save is really just going to depend.
Yep. Okay, where to start? Your TDEE, percentage of cutting calories, or do we have a recommended calculator? So there's a lot of different equations you can use to establish what your TDEE is. Did I put an extra E on that? TDEE, which is your total daily energy expenditure. It's one of the things you're trying to determine is how many calories do you burn in a day so that you know where to set your cutting calorie target. I'm partial to the Harris-Benedict equation.
Agreed.
Acknowledged. Although there are several good ones out there.
Now, we want to make sure that you understand that your watch is not going to be a great read for your TDEE. Mm. So if you have like a smartwatch, Apple Watch, Fitbit, and it tells you your daily calories, I would take that with a super grain of salt. Mm-hmm. So if you want to take that number and maybe shave 500 calories, that'll be roughly probably a little bit closer. But
It all depends.
Yeah. Exactly. So I would... You can go online and type in BMR calculator, get a rough idea for your basal metabolic rate, and then that's multiplied by an activity multiplier. We will say that people tend to be really generous with their activity, which is like ironic. It's like the one place that they're like over generous with. So we would definitely recommend that you do a range of two, you know, take the one that you think you are and then do the one right below it as a multiplier, just to kind of give yourself a healthy range and an idea for that.
I would say most people are 1.3 or 1.35.
Yeah. But occasionally,
it depends.
1.2.
Yeah, that's true.
So as far as like a recommended calculator, Precision Nutrition has a good one. We probably start there. Legion has a decent one. And these are just jumping off points. Really, it's just to establish a general idea. We do custom macro counts as well. And you're welcome to hop onto our website, buttermacros.com, and purchase one. With our custom macro counts, we give a full overview of your case, not just like some numbers. We get an idea of your cutting history as well as your goals, and we can create numbers based on that as well as your lifestyle. So it gets a little bit more specific. But a general rule of thumb is most people start with 20 to 25% of their TDEE as a percentage to cut calories. That is obviously, once again, very general. And it's a good place to start. That being said, some people might have to go into the 30-35% mm-hmm. of a deficit. Some people can lose weight on a higher one. It just really depends.
Exactly. So if, you know, and this again kind of goes to everything that we're saying, like there is so much nuance involved in this that if you are approaching doing a cut and you're really concerned about doing it perfectly or having it work as effectively as possible, which a lot of these questions are about, then it would be in your best interest to get a coach or to get some help with it, because I don't know any other way to say it. There's just a lot of nuance involved, a lot more than we could explain in a podcast.
Absolutely. And we also want to say out loud that, remember, you want to be able to cut with as high of calorie balance as you can and see results. Mm-hmm. We're not talking like diving as deep and as low and as painful as possible because you want to like see results. You want to be able to eat as much as you can and see results. That's the only way that a really, really effective deficit works, mm-hmm. is to be able to have some longevity on it. Once again, back up to the timeline questions. All right, 5, how much is a good rate of loss? So general rule of thumb is anywhere from 0.5 pound a week to 1.5. But once again, it depends.
Right.
The less amount of body fat you have to lose, the slower it's going to go. Mm-hmm. Or if you've been constantly dieting, also slow. So you might be sitting here thinking like, oh, well, I've got like 75 pounds to lose. But if you've been a chronic dieter and under eating for a very, very long time, you will also have a slower rate of loss.
Yes. And just because, you know, that's a general standard to go by doesn't mean it's going to look linear like that. Like, oh, every week it ticks down. You're going to see some fluctuations. What we're looking for is an average of about that rate.
Right. And a trend. So mm-hmm. remember, weight loss is going to look more like the stock market than like a downhill slope.
Yeah.
So you're looking at an overall average.
Yes.
Not a day to day, And even a week to week, you can have some weeks where you've seen some nice results. And then there's like a week that you don't get anything or you tick up. Mm-hmm. And so remember, it's more like the stock market. We want to look at the trends of the stock market. We're not just cashing out because it has one dip.
Yep.
Or one spike, I guess.
Yep.
In reverse, right? All right. So how long of a cut is too long before adaptation occurs and you have to cut lower? This is going to be a super, it depends. Adaptation really depends on a lot on your previous dieting history. So mm-hmm. once again, if you are a chronic undereater, you are going to adapt a whole heck of a lot faster than someone who's never been in a deficit before. These are called plateaus, kind of like what we talked about in the very beginning. It's your body's safeguard mechanism to keep you from dying.
Yep. There are ways to also have what's called a false plateau that can happen with a lack of accuracy, lack of consistency. You're not allowing yourself recovery time. You're constipated, your period. Like, there are a lot of things that can mask progress too. So,
and even not tracking accurately can also look like a plateau because you're actually eating at a maintenance calorie range, which yes. maintenance is technically like a plateau.
Yes.
Because you're not really losing and you're not really gaining.
You really want to be as accurate as possible when you're in a cut.
So you have the data to back yourself up.
Yep.
As far as like when to change your macros, we definitely recommend that before you decide and determine that you're not seeing progress and not seeing results, you've done at least 2 to 3 weeks of consistently hitting your macro targets, as well as getting your water, your steps, and your sleep in. And then you can shave 5%. But this is definitely not a tool that you're going to be using 2 days after and you're not seeing any movement. That's not what this is. A plateau is when you literally have been in a consistent calorie balance and it's not no longer yielding loss. It's not like I've had a couple bad days, but I really want to get this going.
Right.
Shaving.
Or I know I messed up last week and I want to make up for it by going even lower or something like that.
Exactly. All right. Number 7.
a reasonable percentage of body fat to expect to lose. You guys say it with us. It depends.
It depends. Sorry, it was mid-sip. So this is a tricky thing about body fat percentage, and people like get kind of obsessed about body fat percentage.
Mm-hmm.
First
even
of all,
though there's no like exactly. literal, yeah, go for it.
No, you say it.
There's just no way to actually know your body fat percentage exactly. And I can hear all of you saying, but what about InBody? And what about calipers? And what about the thing where they put you in the water tank? And
yeah.
Nope. Every single one of those has their limitations in terms of being able to tell what's body fat, what's water, all of those types of things. So just like we were saying to the previous question, it's going to be a trend. It's going to be you looking at your scale weight, your measurements, pictures, and how about this unquantifiable variable? How you feel. Cares about that.
So if you want a completely accurate reading of your body fat percentage, that will happen after you die. It's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you actually like they can figure
an autopsy.
An autopsy can figure out your perfect body fat percentage. So until that happens, which let's hope that you're not putting that in your will. Like, can you just make sure that I made it to 12%? You're using it as a trend. So for instance, like, let's just say you go get a DEXA scan, which once again, Heidi mentioned there's limitations, like literally water can affect what that looks like. But let's just say yours said 30 and you go into a cut and the next time you do one, it's like 28. Then you can say that you've lost some body fat percentages, whether or not that's accurate or not. But it's just a general trend.
Yeah, exactly. Even though it may not be exactly accurate, it's still a standard you can use, right? Like you can, let's say you go in and get one from like an InBody and it says 25%. You went in at noon after you had breakfast on a regular weekday. So you'd want to repeat those same things the next time that you go. And then it will give you something to actually compare it to instead of just like, you know, throwing, you just want to make sure you're recreating the same experiment, so to speak, because that's really what we're talking about here is a grandiose version of the scientific method. You have a theory about how many calories you burn. You have a hypothesis about what you would need to, what calorie level would create fat loss. And then you're going to be testing that hypothesis and taking data and things like that.
And then also understand like body fat percentages also comes down to, there's also a layer of like muscle mass versus fat mass too involved too. So you can actually have, it's not necessarily correlated. Like I think a lot of people go, oh, the lower my body fat percentage is, it means like the better the number on the scale is. That's not necessarily true as well. Like
Right. You
could have like a higher percent of body fat, but also have a high percentage of muscle mass as well. And that can also affect the scale. So if you're using that as like a marker, that's like not the scale, just understand that there's also compounding variables in that as well.
Yes.
All right.
Great point.
So I'm conflicted between slow and steady and don't be in a deficit too long. How do we marry the two? Well, this is, once again, it depends. Because the tricky thing is slow and steady, while it's ideal, a lot of people are impatient. Mm-hmm. And then don't be in a deficit too long, which is also true, but also, are you seeing your results? So it really comes down to you as an individual and what you're up for. Because while yes, we don't cut calories for nothing. Mm-hmm. First of all, right yes. out the gate. So if you're not seeing results and you're eating low calorie, you got to either just get out or assess what you can do to actually make that worth your while. Slow and steady always is going to win the race, right? And honestly, that's probably the most manageable way to have weight loss, but also be able to live your life in a really great way. Don't be in a deficit too long usually errs on the side of like getting really, really aggressive. And I think I've seen maybe like two people out of like thousands of women we've coached who's been able to sustain something like that with like actual results.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you could be the outlier. The bottom line is you want to be as reasonable and measured as you can in a deficit, because there's so many more emotional things at play that happen when you start cutting calories, that it's really hard to feel really clear about your goals and your weight loss when you're in a deficit.
Mm-hmm. Which is again why it can be really beneficial to have a coach during this process, so that you have somebody who's got objective eyes on you. Because as we'll also discuss as we keep going, cutting calories does have very real emotional and mental ramifications that do cloud your lens. That's just the way you see things, the way you feel. It can be really hard to be objective and make decisions that are beneficial for the progress that you want to make.
And in all honesty, like that's definitely one of the things that like Heidi and I have benefited from in any of these contexts, whether it's cutting, building, maintenance, is being able to have somebody there just to be like, hey, you're doing all right.
Yeah.
Keep going. Mm-hmm. Right. All right. Post-pregnancy cutting. So this is like a little bit tricky and everyone's going to have an opinion on this, but Heidi and I we definitely subscribe to the fact that we want you that like, if you're nursing, your milk supply is king to us. Mm-hmm. Like for me personally, I couldn't cut calories and lose weight when I was nursing because I wasn't a champion milk maker. So when I would cut calories, I would lose my milk supply. And so for me, the priority was feeding my baby over weight loss. So I just want to put that out there that it might be the case for you. It might not be the case for you, but also just know that it can affect your milk supply. So if nursing your baby is a priority, then you also maybe want to believe, and I know there's this pressure to like get right back into like your whatever, I hate the pre-baby genes thing, or like get back to a certain way, but also realizing that sometimes it's just not the time.
Yep.
And that being said, also understand that like when you are cutting calories while you are nursing or postpartum, it's going to be really hard because the data might be skewed because you're not sleeping super great. Mm-hmm. You're also in a higher stress situation, and there's also demands on your physical body and also your emotional self, which those, if you weren't even postpartum and you were having all the stressors, we would definitely advise that might not be the time. So just also that qualifier too.
Totally.
That being said, you would like to.
Totally. And it's like, I definitely understand the feeling of wanting to get back to feeling like yourself again. But I would argue you're going to make, better emotional gains by supporting yourself and doing everything you can to feel physically good during that time. I can't imagine very many of the women that we've worked with turning to their daughter, sister, friend and being like, yes, you just had this major life event, but don't you think you'd feel better if you lost some weight right now? Like I that's especially with the negative emotions and stuff that come with cutting. I would just encourage you, if you're in this space, to be really, really good to yourself and be really loving and be really supportive of the phase of life that you're in right now. And that this whole like post baby perfectionist thing of like, you know, the girls who do it right are the ones that can get back into their genes. Like that's not a thing. That's mental poison.
Oh, absolutely. And obviously if you're on Instagram, you're literally seeing like the less than 1%, like most women are just trying to like to make it every day with a newborn. And so have some compassion about that too. As far as like what it really would look like, we would definitely recommend you start in a maintenance calorie range. Mm-hmm. And I would shave maybe like 50 to 100 calories depending on your, and watching your milk supply really closely. Sometimes even the difference between 50 calories can like make it disappear. And you definitely don't want to be chasing back to have a milk supply. So you can start out at maintenance, shave 50 to 100, see how that feels, see if you're getting some movement. If your supply is good, you could shave another 50 to 100. It's a very sensitive calorie range, I feel like. So it's hard to make a blanket statement like every girl should do this. So just once again, if you have the mental wherewithal to do that, take some data, watch it just the same way you would if you weren't post-pregnancy or nursing. Mm-hmm. But also realize like your sleep and your stress levels are also going to impact your results. Mm-hmm. So if you're sleeping like 2 hours a night, yep, it's probably better for you to like put some energy there.
Again, it's like cutting is complicated enough. It really would be, I mean, everybody gets to do what they want, but you're just going to make it a lot simpler for yourself. If you, you know, again, it's like kind of like what we were talking about with the timeline before about, you know, what's on your calendar. It's like, can you cut during the busiest time of your life? Yeah. Is it going to be the most successful or feel the best? Probably not. And so I would just put that out here as well, because again, when we're cutting with an energy of like, I can't be okay the way that I am, that's just going to create more of the same.
And if this podcast might just be something you need to hear that it's okay to not mm-hmm. automatically dive into a deficit after you've had a baby, we will tell you yes.
That's agreed. So and
if you need to hear it from somebody, if you need to hear it from two coaches who have your well-being in mind, understand that you are not required to do that.
And there are lots of other things you can do that are supportive of eventual fat loss that aren't just cutting calories. You can incorporate more walks. You can incorporate some more mobility or light exercise. You can prioritize sleep. You can get enough fiber. You can get enough protein. You can make sure you're eating enough to recover. Like there's lots of things that you can do that will still, that when the time comes to cut calories, you will be in so much of a better spot.
All right, so that dives right into surgery and illness cutting. Okay. Kind of similar. But so first of all, let's start with just surgery in general. Surgery is a trauma on your body.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Whether you were cut open or whatever it is, that requires recovery on a level that that you won't believe that cutting calories does not support.
Yeah.
So whenever you're on any kind of body trauma, your body is going to definitely want to require the calories to be able to repair and fix it. And the same thing goes with illness. You are in an impacted energy state and energy balance. So when you are having surgery, a lot of people are like, oh, I just had surgery, it's a great time to cut calories. Actually, not.
Right.
Unless you want to maybe prolong your healing and recovery. If maybe it's like 2 to 3 weeks to heal and you want to extend it to 6 or 7 because you super like, you super like recovering.
Or in the middle of a Korean drama.
Right. Exactly. Just know that that will impact it. So the best thing to do is to kind of pull yourself back up into like a maintenance calorie range. And I know you're asking yourself, like, well, I'm not going to be exercising or be able to walk the way that I used to. That's fine. You can still be in a maintenance calorie range for your TDEE. It might be 100 calories less than like your actual maintenance calorie range that you usually are in, but it definitely is the best thing for you to do is to get back into a calorie balance so that way you can heal and recover and you can return to your life. Yep. Same thing goes with illness. Your kid is sick on the couch with a fever. You're not like, hey, lazy butt, get up and like go do some exercise. And also, I'm not going to feed you today. If you are sick, take care of yourself. That is a priority.
Yeah, no force feeding yourself chicken or any of those things. Just get better.
Yeah, just get better. It's a couple of days and you recovering and resting. And if carbs are the only thing that sounds good, please eat them. Like, ain't nobody need to be hitting a protein goal when they feel like nauseous, lightheaded, sick, or whatever. So once again, if you wouldn't do it to your kids or your mother, daughter, sister, friend, I don't say that as well as you do, then realize you are that person too. So surgery and illness. All right.
Okay. And now what about larger weight loss goals, like 50, 70, 100 pounds? So that obviously is going to be different in several ways. We would definitely encourage that you break up that goal into smaller phases. And one of the, what that might look like, we're kind of going to merge into our next question, which about diet breaks. So for example, let's say you have a 70 pound weight loss goal. We would want you to take a look at your calendar and set up a few different cuts potentially through the year where you have breaks in between. What is a diet break, Natalie?
A diet break is a way to actually give yourself a little bit of a mental reprieve, but also kind of recoup a little bit. It's definitely psychological in a lot of ways. There are some physiological benefits as well, but what it is bringing your calories back up to a maintenance calorie range to be able to like extend your dieting period. Now, you aren't losing weight in a diet break phase. So that's also part of it. It's basically like putting it on pause. Mm-hmm. It's no different than you watching a movie and pausing it so you can go pee. Same kind of idea where it's like, hey, it gives you a little bit of a momentary break to be able to like recoup and then come back to it. And that's really how to tackle larger weight loss goals. I know in our minds, we think, oh, I'm just going to go until I accomplish it. That can be really, really defeating. And most of us don't have a year where we don't have anything going on, where we can literally just stay in like a fat loss phase. Plus it does require a little bit of strategy to get a larger block of fat loss because of plateaus and things like that. And it also honestly depends on your starting point too. If you mm-hmm. have been under eating for a long, long, long period of time and you have a larger weight loss goal, you might need to spend more time in maintenance and reversing to maintenance to be able to earn the right for your metabolism to recognize a deficit in order to even start your fat loss block.
Yes. And similarly, if you're a chronic overeater, it's going to be a really good, you're going to want to take some time to make sure that you can count consistently in maintenance and get to a solid place there, confident that you can hit your maintenance macros consistently, because a cut's just going to be even harder.
Absolutely. And another incredible thing about larger weight loss goals is that when you break it down into smaller windows, there's way more opportunities for success in your mm-hmm. mind. So while yes, your long-term goal might be 70, which is still even arguable. Like I think we also have arbitrary numbers with weight loss goals. Like some people, I need to lose 70 pounds. In reality, it might not be that much too. Mm-hmm. Giving yourself like, let's just do the first 10 to 15 or 20, makes it feel a lot more attainable and accessible. And you could also see incredible change even through those diet break periods where you could maybe go to maintenance for a couple months and then jump back into one. As long as your calories are yielding results, you can diet break and just dive right back in. Mm-hmm. Once you do hit a plateau, once again, kind of back up to the beginning, you can shave a percentage, or you might just need to reverse maintenance and give yourself a break. But it's just more about like pacing.
Yes.
Structuring it.
Yes.
How long is a cutting phase? I think that kind of just is an it depends thing. You can break them up with diet breaks, but know that every time you break it up with a diet break, that just extends your cutting timeline.
Yeah, we kind of think of it like taking a snow day. You just add it on to the end, which is if that works for you. Obviously, nobody ever has to cut. These are just optional things.
All right. How long is a reasonable amount of time before needing to take a break? This is going to really depend person mm-hmm. to person. Some people we've seen go with great intensity for 3 to 4 months. We've seen people after 4 weeks are like, dude, I need a break.
Yep.
It really is going to depend on your mental fortitude and what your life circumstances are.
Yep.
Once again, I want to say it, everyone in their perfect mind thinks like, I'm just going to go straight through. But the reality of life is that it's really sometimes hard to do that. So taking a break doesn't mean you're throwing in the towel. It means you're actually giving support to your goals.
Yes. I think of it a little bit. Why is the analogy of like running coming up when totally. You remember when it was like just to the end and like, oh, actually maybe to the fence.
Yes, exactly. And I think that's one thing I would actually love for us to bring up is that you can go into a deficit thinking that it's going to look a certain way or you're going to do it for X amount. You are allowed to bail out anytime.
Yes.
This is you electively doing this. Nobody is forcing you to do this. This yep. is you in your will and your decision. So it's like, if you say, oh, I'm going to go 8 weeks and around 4 or 5 or 6, you're not feeling like it's worth it or it's not a good time. There's no shame.
Yes.
In being like, I'm going to call it early.
Right. And you can call it a pivot or you can call it a failure. It's totally up to you.
Right. It's like, if you're saving money for a trip and you're like, oh shoot, my car just broke down. I need to use this money to like, you know, get a tire. That's not you going against like your
failing.
Vacation goals.
Yes.
It's you just being like, all right, so maybe right now, I need to like go a little longer or wait again to start.
Exactly. Saving. And this kind of ties into one of the things that makes cutting so challenging is when you have, I can't think of another way to phrase it other than like goal dissonance, where we hear this with like, oh, I want to have ice cream with the kids, but I also have this goal, or my mom made me this homemade pie for my birthday, but I have these goals, or I want to go to this special event, but I have these goals. Like, yes, you can try to negotiate it. You can try to make it work. You can pre-log, you can plan, you can whatever, or you can or you can take a snow day. Like it really, when we have these two things coming up against each other, like I want to be a good mom, I want to be a good daughter, I want to be a good friend, I want to be a good wife, whatever it is. And I feel like there's not a very obvious or clear way to do both. It's okay for you to choose something other than hitting your deficit. And you don't have to shame yourself for it either. Yeah. You can just take a day.
And you've heard us say it a million times, it's okay to love your life more than 5 pounds.
Dude, fully.
All right. So being more restrictive, but be in and out, or longer and a smaller cut. So obviously this is going to be like an it depends scenario, because being really restrictive is really hard for all of us. Are there people definitely more disciplined than others? For sure. And are there people more laser focused than others, depending on what their goals are? Also for sure. But being in and out is also very subjective too, because you could be super restrictive and it could still take you forever.
Yep.
So just being really realistic about you and your dieting history and what you have the ability to do is really going to be your best bet. Longer, smaller cut is also tricky too, because you need to get into a deficit. A lot of people want to be able to like not have it hurt and like see results. Mm-hmm. Sorry guys.
Yep.
It's going to pinch. And if it's not pinching,
you're probably not getting results.
Exactly. So I think sometimes we have people like, oh, I'm just going to shave 5%. Congratulations, you're still in a maintenance range.
Seriously.
You shave 10%. It's going to be a super slow crawl. Are you willing to be in the mental state where you think you are cutting for 1 pound a month? Probably not.
Yep. I mean, it's like to your vacation planning thing. It's like putting away a dollar a day or something. I mean, it's like depends on, but the size of your goal is going to inform how the approach that you take for sure.
All right, getting through the second half of your cut when you're more tired. Well, congratulations. This is what a deficit is like. this is where, if you are actually more tired and you know it, this is where a diet break would be a really good idea, or evaluating whether or not you feel like there is a second half.
Yep.
A lot of times we have people starting a deficit and halfway through they're like, you know what? I just kind of can't.
Mm-hmm.
Great time to be like, we're hitting pause and reversing to maintenance. You always have that option. Maintenance is not a place where your goals and your dreams go to die. It's a place for you to like recoup and regain some energy.
It's a rest between sets.
Exactly. And being tired really comes down to like, you need more self-care. Mm-hmm. You need to up the self-care at this point, whether it's like you take more naps, you reduce how much you're taking on, you say no more, you maybe take more rest days with your workouts, you allow yourself to do a deload week. You definitely like your physical, the physical ramifications of cutting will make you more tired. You have less energy.
Yep. Literally.
So you're unable to like perform the same way you would. There's definitely a honeymoon period in the beginning of a deficit, especially if you start seeing results where you feel really energized by it. But the reality of it is every single week you go in a deficit, you have less and less access to your normal.
Exactly. It's like if I told you, I want you to drive everywhere that you drove last week, but on 25% less of the gas. Yeah. How would you do that?
Right. You'd run out way fast.
Exactly. Yeah. So similarly, you've got to adjust your life. This is what we mean when we say it's not an add-on hobby. this is something that's going to require your attention and focus, and it's going to bring some negativity into your life. And so you want to be proactive about preparing how to deal with all of that.
You are going to feel more defeated in the second half of your cut than your first.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, and I mean, we'll get to this too, but this is sort of at the heart of what all these questions are about, is, you know, how to avoid failure, confusion, shame, frustration, disillusionment, disappointment, all of the things, right?
It's really hard to avoid those in a deficit. All right. So super cranky on low calories, okay to do longer. You're okay to do whatever you want, but just realize that you're not going to get, like, you are going to be super cranky on low calories because that's what being low calorie is.
Yes. It's to Nat's point, like you can take a diet break there, but also just acknowledge where that super cranky, that crankiness is coming from. It's like saying, you know, be pregnant, but don't be uncomfortable. It's like your deficit is going to be uncomfortable and feeling negative, overreacting to stress. Those kinds of things are part and parcel with it. So you can have even just getting away from the place of like, I should be able to do the whole thing with a smile plastered on my face. Like that might be something good for you to know, right? Like you can, you're not crazy for being a little grumpy about it, but that might also not be how you want to continue. So maybe there's some things that, some self-supportive, self-care, diet break, whatever it is, something that you can do to sort of help yourself feel better. Because the more negative you feel, like, that pendulum is going to swing back. So the more restricted, cranky, grumpy, upset you feel or whatever, like, that's, the pendulum's going to, you're going to see that pendulum swing in your behavior of acting out.
And then also ask yourself, are you super cranky because you're not seeing the results you want? Are you super cranky because you don't want to be here and you don't want to be doing this, but you feel like you have to? There's other reasons besides just the actual physical grumpiness of being on low calories. So also recognize that a lot of that might just be what's in your head too.
Totally. Like, there's sensations and emotions.
Exactly.
And understanding the difference. Like, being tired is unpleasant. Adding on a story on top of being tired about how, like, you shouldn't be tired, or this is too hard, or it seems like other people don't have it as hard, or whatever it is. You see how you're adding a story on top of it, when, like, you could also be like, man, I'm tired today. What can I do to help myself with that?
And one, like, we actually just got a DM the other day about a girl who's, like, having a really hard time. She's hungry all the time. You know, her maintenance is usually 2,500 and she's like at like 1900 calories, and she's like super cranky about that. So my maintenance calorie range is her cutting range, which means that, like, you know, it's definitely possible to, like, eat and obviously making sure that your food is right. But also, I think there's part of it, like, are your goals, do your goals or why you're cutting feel good enough to you? Because if you're super cranky that you feel like you deserve more food and you're not getting it, then you should be eating at maintenance.
Yeah.
It really comes down to, like, what's your why as well. Like, if you're motivated because you have fat loss goals and you want to see it, that's part and parcel of being in a deficit. You know, you're going to be cranky.
Yeah.
So it's like, if you are feeling bitter and resentful about the calories you're having to eat in order to have fat loss, once again, maintenance is always available to you.
Totally.
All right. Why do people cut after maintenance and bulk and do this over and over? But this is actually how you change your physique.
Yeah.
Now, whether you do it intentionally or not, a lot of people do gain weight after a deficit, even in maintenance, and then they have to cut again. And then some people actually do it strategically. It's just part and parcel. If you want, sorry, I use that thing twice. I hate to use it twice.
I've done that a couple times too.
But I'm also not going to, like, edit that out.
Yeah, it's way too hard.
It's because this is what happens when you constantly want fat loss.
Yeah. Absolutely. Okay, where are we? What are some scenarios that would not warrant a cut after a build phase? Well, it's such an interesting worded question. So you don't ever have to cut, like, to your earlier point. That all of this is completely optional. If these are not goals that feel good to you, don't do them, and don't try to brainwash yourself into a place where they do feel good.
Or gaslight yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, if you gained weight or bulked up and you like how you look or you're comfortable there or any of those things, like, I mean, basically that's what I did.
Yeah. And honestly, there are definitely physiques that would benefit from never being in a cut.
Yeah.
Honestly. So even
if there are physiques that would, so what?
Yeah.
Doesn't mean you have to.
You chasing fat loss obviously there definitely are, like, extenuating circumstances, but, like, most people do it for vanity reasons.
Right.
So just being aware that that's a reason and owning that reason is also part of it as well. Like, if I want to be like, I'm cutting calories because I want the scale number to go down, owning that is also part of this process.
Well, exactly. I mean,
let's just not say I just want to feel better. Feel better about what? Feel better about the number on the scale? Own what you're doing it for.
Exactly. Like, even saying doing it for vanity reasons, like, the shame is optional in saying that.
Oh yeah.
Right. Like, I mean, we all wear makeup. I mean, I dye my hair. Like, same. You know what I mean?
I have a job because people are vain about their hair.
Yes, exactly. Like, what's the difference between self-respect and vanity? I mean, in some of these areas, it's like how far you take it or how you feel about it. Right.
And what you make it mean.
Exactly. So nobody has to do any of these things, but we're here talking about it because it's a hobby. It's an area of interest. And for Nat and I, it's really, at this point, I mean, I freaking call it a spiritual calling just to make sure that women are not abusing themselves with deficits.
Sorry, I just looked at vanity and it's like excessive pride in or admiration of one's own appearance or achievements. Not necessarily a bad thing.
Exactly.
Okay, so, okay.
Good one. Whew. Good one.
This is a spicy one. Overcoming binge and restrict cycles and beating discouragement. Okay, well, this could be a completely its own podcast on its own.
Seriously.
But if you're in a binge and restrict cycle, it means that you need to get out of a deficit.
Yep.
You have a lot more things that you are depriving yourself of emotionally, and therefore physically using it as a tool to feel better or to not feel better.
Yep. I mean, like we said earlier, diminishing calories can create a lot of stress in the body, a lot of cravings, a lot of those things. So there's some physical symptoms that come with that. And then similarly, eating is just a really easy way to influence your brain chemistry. So it's an easy way to feel like you have control, or restricting is a way to, you know, all the dopamine pings and all of that kind of stuff. So really what it comes down to is coping with your negative emotion, being supportive with it. And even this term beating discouragement, I think is interesting, because have you ever known anybody that, how would you say this? Like, what is the main emotion that you would approach someone with discouragement with?
Compassion and love.
Right. So where does beating discouragement, what place does that have? Like, there's such an interesting, So I guess my point is there's a huge opportunity for some self-compassion here, even in just this one statement, right? Because overcoming binge and restrict means you're not even accepting that is where you are, right? And a lot of us have self-medicated with food. There's nothing wrong with you. You're not alone. It's about understanding what's going on in your own mind and beating discouragement. Discouragement is part of the spectrum of human emotions. You will never get through the rest of your life without having discouragement about your body, about yourself. You never will. So it's about developing a set of tools to soothe and comfort yourself in discouragement, just like you would any human being that you cared for.
Beautifully said.
Thank you.
I think this is also a really great time, and I know nobody likes this answer, but to ask some questions.
Yeah.
A lot of times binging and restricting comes down to a lot of needs not being met.
Yes.
So this is where the care and love and compassion and thoughtfulness of your own person comes in. And it's definitely possible to, air quote, overcome it, but it's not going to be met with a calorie restriction.
Yeah.
Then transitioning in and out. So this comes to reversing to maintenance, and that we have a maintenance podcast in Q&A that you can check out. We actually did it first before the cutting one, which I think people are like, why did you do that one? Because it's so important.
That's right.
So that would be another podcast. So yes. Hopefully that helps. Big takeaways. You never have to be in a deficit.
Absolutely. And there's no way to do it perfectly or to have some sort of perfect recipe for cutting where you avoid all negative emotions involved.
What? In fact, just remember, you're actually inviting negative emotion by being in a calorie deficit. Yeah.
And if you approached it with self-support, it could be an opportunity to really build your confidence in ways you never have before. But you can also really use it as an opportunity to beat up on yourself. So you want to make sure, this is what people say when they're like, what's your why? Because the why is what you're going to turn to when the chips are down. I think we both hope that it would be something encouraging and self-supportive and full of self-love.
And maybe also consider taking your why and seeing if you can do it in maintenance too.
There you go. Nice.
All right. See ya on the next podcast.
Bye-bye. Oof, you made it. The butter dish didn't melt your face.
Thanks so much for hanging with us. If you enjoyed that episode, we'd love it if you would subscribe, share it to your social media, or leave a comment. That all really helps, so the kids say. If you want to find us, you can find us at Instagram at ButterYourMacros.
On the web at ButterYourMacros.com.
Twitter and TikTok at What's Up Butters. And we'll see you guys on the next episode.
Thanks.